Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Ann Bax. Hello, Ann.
Hello, Gary.
So Ann is the former president and CEO of United Way of Central Missouri. We've asked her to come in today because the community right now is remembering in many different ways the five-year anniversary of the tornado that just wreaked havoc on hundreds of homes and businesses. I guess, Ann, my first question is, what memories come to mind for you when you think back to those first hours and days after the tornado struck on May 22nd?
The first memory I have is you're stunned because you never want or think it will happen to your community. And very quickly, my mind went to what is the role of the United Way, given it happened in the evening, had a little bit of time to think. You know, we did not have a written playbook. We had a lot of conversations with other United Ways around Missouri about what was appropriate. And we had even started really writing a playbook for what would be appropriate for United Ways, but that had not been completed. So that was the first thing is, you know, your mind is racing, what's appropriate. And then on a personal note, my father-in-law's home had a direct hit. And my father-in-law was home alone. He lives alone. And so immediately, unbelievably, his cell phone was working. So we were able to reach him, but certainly scared for his safety because he had gotten knocked down by debris. So my husband then, of course, immediately gets in the car and starts driving through all of this to get to him. So there was a personal note of being fearful for my father-in-law, and then my husband and his family all on the road to try to get to him. And then from the perspective of the community and how we needed to go to work for the community.
Yeah. Well, and when you talk about United Way, so United Way has how many partner agencies?
So now we're up to 29 partner agencies. Okay. Yes, we've added three in the last year. So we knew, you know, really our role in the community, we wear several hats, but United Way is the volunteer mobilizer. We knew that it would be appropriate for us to mobilize the volunteers. And that being said, the cool thing was the community must see us that way because the phone started ringing off the hook the next morning. We were blessed. None of our staff had any impact in their homes. So everyone could come to work that day. Our building was not damaged. So we could go and do work as usual. And again, the phone started ringing off the hook. People started coming in the door. It was just so, so busy with people calling and wanting to help. And then not just to volunteer. The other piece of what was appropriate for us was donation management. People wanted to start donating.
Right.
And our boardroom filled in 3 days with cleaning supplies and food and water and things survivors would need. So again, no written playbook. So you're kind of reeling and the phone's ringing off the hook, people wanting to help. And then we're trying to reach out to community partners and make sure that we all knew what the other one was doing. You've heard me say before, one of the calls that I got that morning was from Matt Tollerton and Dan Westhues from Central Bank. Great community partners with United Way and just a major staple in our community of the goodness in our community. And, and they wanted to know how they could help. And I kind of tongue-in-cheek laughingly at that time said, I have no idea. But very quickly, you know, I said, we need manpower. We need help and women power. We need people to help us to manage all of the volunteers and donors that are calling and coming in our doors.
Yeah.
So they loaned us about five people for, it was about 3 weeks. And Matt himself came in and worked side by side with us for days to help us just put together a plan of what we needed to do. And certainly that was when I say we, United Way, our agency partners. But then 10 days after the tornado, we had a community-wide meeting where we called in every stakeholder in the community that wanted to get involved. We had about 60 people in our boardroom. And from that, we had poster boards all over the walls. And we said, who can help in the short term with transportation, feeding, cleaning, just, you know, all of the major areas of need. From that meeting, we developed our short-term recovery committee that morphed into the interim and then what became the long-term recovery committee.
And I guess that raises the question, so how great was the need and what were the primary needs?
Yeah, immediately in the response mode, we were blessed that there wasn't a huge amount of people that were hurt. We had some people that were hurt, but no one killed, which was just a miracle and such a blessing. But, you know, immediately cleaning supplies and food and clean water, that's what people needed immediately just to live and to be safe.
Yeah.
And then the other really short-term thing was debris cleanup. And so the community was not safe immediately. locally. And so ironically, Chip Webb was our board chair for United Way at that time.
Yeah.
And Chip wears the hat as the lead of Ameren, our local utility company. So Chip and I were in constant communication. So as people called or came in the door and wanted to help volunteer, go out and clean debris, we had them go to our website and sign up on our volunteer platform. And we told them as soon as we get the all clear from Ameren, we will send out an email. And that was on Saturday morning. And we had about 450 people that signed up. They wanted to help with debris cleanup. And so they got the email and we told them to go to Capitol Mall, and where AmeriCorps, who's trained in debris management in time of disaster, they had come in. SEMA had brought them in. They were set up there. And so we were able to send people to the mall, had a short little tutorial from AmeriCorps.
Right.
And then they took them out in small groups for cleanup. But again, just providing those necessary things at the onset was so important, but also just the debris cleanup was certainly where everyone's, so many people's mind went about how they could help.
Oh, absolutely. And it was just amazing to see those volunteers out in the community and the transformation from those neighborhoods that were just trees everywhere.
It was. And, you know, our community, we always knew that we had a giving community, but to see the people in action. And again, the great problem we had is that we couldn't manage all the people that wanted to help when we needed help managing that. You know, I remember there were pop-up little on the corners, there were people bringing Chick-fil-A and sub sandwiches, and they would just set up, post up on a corner to give it out to the volunteers, and people bringing water around and people walking around giving hugs and you know, all the things that everyone needed. You know, the disaster survivors, some of the hardest times of their life. Some of them lost everything, but yet to have the love of your community to get you through those tough days. I've talked to so many survivors that talk about that. And as hard as it was, that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So the weeks and months and years later, the needs changed. So what are some of the challenges and how did the United Way and its partner agencies try to address those?
Yeah. So, you know, you go from response and, you know, again, that first weeks is just, we had our short-term recovery committee that met every day. And that was just to assist those people most impacted that had really no other assistance. You know, they didn't have family. They didn't have a place to go. They did not have the mechanism to really start to recover on their own. And that's where the short-term recovery committee, we met every morning to address and try to help those individuals. And then as you get the, you know, those people, we really helped to get them situated. Then you start looking at those people who had some assistance, were able to stay with a family or a friend, or were able to live in their home safely. And so those people started coming to our long-term recovery committee. And that committee was formed out of, we called it the Cole and Miller County Long-Term Recovery Committee, because as you know, Eldon was impacted as well. And that's part of United Way service area. And they didn't have the capacity to put together their own recovery committee. So we had some people from Eldon that served on that, and then mostly Cole. We structured that and we modeled that after other long-term recovery committees. We had so much help from SEMA and the MOVOAD, which is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster, and Catholic Charities had two people on their team that was trained in disaster response and social service work. So again, we leaned heavily, and the Adventist, I need to say, Jody Dickott and his team, they did the donation management in Joplin. So that kind of speaks to the level of expertise that they had. And I can tell you, I personally leaned heavily on them, and our recovery committee did too, because we didn't have that expertise. We had been blessed and never been impacted like that. So, so they taught us very quickly what we needed to do. And we structured our long-term recovery committee around those models that others have had through their disasters. You know, someone could apply for a long-term recovery, but first they have to go to FEMA. They have to submit for FEMA funding and their own insurance. You know, the experts told us that there would be 25% of the certain disaster survivors would really need no help. 25% would need minimal help. 25% would need probably minimal, I mean, somewhat assistance, be it a financial or more just resources for the community. And then the final 25% would take the majority of the long-term recovery committee's time and their resources. And it really was true for us. Yeah. So we were able to assist people pretty quickly as far as those people that maybe needed a refrigerator, or maybe they needed help with a couple nights stay while, you know, they had some repairs being done and things that were traumatic for them, but yet something very fairly easy for us as a long-term recovery committee to assist with. And then you have some people that didn't want to leave their homes, even though they were really in desperate need of repair. You know, and again, all of the information that came to us, Catholic Charities was the front forward facing with the disaster survivors, and they never brought names to the committee. It was all confidential, which it needed to be. But there was a family I know that was living in really horrid conditions. Like, you know, they had had some sewer issues that had been exacerbated by the tornado, and they were living in, you know, and didn't want to leave because they didn't have anywhere to go, and they were afraid to leave. They didn't think they'd ever be able to come back. And and those are the, that was one case that I remember that it took years for us to be able to, number one, convince them that this was not a safe situation and they needed to leave so that we could, and they weren't able to come back because the home needed to be taken down. It's hard. And then the home you've lived in your whole life is, they knew they had nowhere to go. So we helped with transitioning them out of that, but it did take years.
So what are some of the other tangible things that that committee was responsible for that you could see?
We became the fiscal agent. We set up a response and recovery fund. We raised $357,000. Much of that came in from our local community, but some came in just from outside of our community, and which was an amazing thing. Again, that just organically happened. And we were blessed. We felt United Way was blessed that our community trusted us to be that steward of charitable dollar for this disaster. And so United Way was a fiscal agent, but we held those funds and long-term recovery committee. Then we held them for the long-term recovery committee so that they had those funds to then assist those disaster survivors. And then we also, about $700,000 in physical donations of, be it mattresses and TVs and kitchen items and linens and bedding and all the things that people need when their home is destroyed. And Capital West Christian Church gave us their facility, their event center, for several months. And we set up there. Disaster survivors could come in and basically come in and get what they needed, be it cleaning supplies and food, but also, again, to, you know, rebuild their homes.
Yeah.
I was able to be really involved in that. And that was probably the biggest effort that we undertook because the needs are so varied. And the Adventists staffed that because they knew how to do that from Joplin. The way our business community stepped up, I still remember I was asking some business partners for a pump jack, and they were all looking at me like, I have no idea what you're asking for. And then I think it was like a pallet jack. So everyone wanted to help. And so, you know, if someone didn't have what we needed to set up the donation center, you know, get it up and running, they would, you know, direct me to someone else. But we were able to leverage those wonderful business partners that support United Way in our community. And they all came in and helped us, you know, in ways that we could not have done on our own.
Yeah.
And so it was just such a beautiful team effort from our community, be it individuals, you know, wanting to donate from their own homes, and then our business community. So it was beautiful.
I think that's something that gets lost in the whole equation at times, is the incredible role that United Way and its partner agencies had in this recovery, because I think you're right. Any tragedy like this, there are often times where you can't trust the help, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the legacy of work and partnerships that United Way had with businesses, with the community, they knew who to turn to. There was no doubt that they could trust that their donations would go where it was supposed to go, or if they needed help, that they would get the help they needed without other strings attached. I think the community owes United Way and its partner agencies a great thank you for
the work
it's done.
And I appreciate that. And we do feel honored. I remember we had so many conversations, of course, with our board of directors and talking about, it just made sense. And we knew it was the right thing to do, to put everything else aside and try to take the lead, because there was no script or playbook in our community that said, when this happens, you know, this agency does this, this church does that. And that's why we're working on putting together the co-ad for future. But I still, even though it was a lot of work, and we sometimes thought, are we doing this right? And should we be doing it this way? But it's back to the point how we leaned on the experts, and they were all so great to could call them day or night to say, this has come up and how should we handle it? But feel blessed that we were able to be so involved and work shoulder to shoulder. Partner agencies stepped up, and also so many other faith-based groups and other health and human service agencies. We got to know each other even better. Certainly our own agency partners, you know, for United Way, we work together so closely. But those other groups that came in and were so selfless and giving and wanted to roll up their sleeves and help as well, it just strengthened our community. And I said, you know, I say it was a heart-wrenching first 6 months, but heartwarming because, again, we got to know each other better. And in the aftermath is, you know, our community stronger because we all developed stronger relationships, more trust and credibility and accountability, which is all very important in when you're working with, you know, in nonprofits. I mean, in not for-profits too. But right. certainly in the nonprofit world, we talk about building that trust and that, you know, you have to earn it. And that's what we really worked hard to do.
Well, as you mentioned, the Long-Term Recovery Committee ultimately ceased and there's a new body in its place. So talk a little bit about COAD.
So again, this is a best practice. This isn't something that we've come up with, but so we've developed Cole County Community Organizations Active in Disaster, or COAD. Many communities form these COADs prior to a disaster. We didn't have that in place. So we now have really kind of a script. We just now need to put it on paper. And basically it's all about making sure that we have the relationships built with all of the entities in the community that need to be involved to best serve the community when a disaster happens. And it may not be a tornado. Hopefully it's not a tornado. It may be some other sort of a disaster, you know, the pandemic. We had a playbook after the disaster and we rolled right into COVID, you know, and we utilized those relationships and those partnerships. And we really did have some things in place that were helpful to serve the community in the pandemic that had been put into play in the disaster. But so going forward, getting ourselves really a foundation built for future disasters or community emergencies. And so it's ironic, but 5 years ago, the person that led Red Cross, that person, that leadership has changed. Person that led Salvation Army, that leadership has changed. Our mayor has changed. The leader of the United Way has changed. So that's just a few examples of if something happened tomorrow, the current leadership doesn't have, you know, that tribal knowledge of how it was handled. So the good news is pretty much most of us are still around. So there wouldn't be a big gap, you know, in that knowledge. But it's important that we build those relationships and partnerships and keep them going so that when something does happen, it's just a matter of picking up the phone and we know who's responsible for donation management. We know who's responsible for transportation and where the shelters are going to be, the temporary shelters and all of those things that we took up the first 3-4 weeks after the disaster to really get all that in place. This time, next time, after the COADs, you know, we have everything really in place, it'll be just like flipping a light switch. And so we'll be ready to jump into action, whatever that community emergency looks like.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. I mean, when you come through a tragedy like this, there are lessons you learn, right? Things that you wish you had done differently, and you would hate to lose those, right?
You bet.
So what are maybe a couple of the lessons you learned going through this?
One of the things we laughed about the other day, and it wasn't funny at the time, no one told us that we needed to be keeping track of the volunteer hours because you could get FEMA reimbursements from that. Now that's huge.
That is huge.
Yeah, that would come back to our city and our county. And no one told us that. So we had to go back and try to figure all that out from log sheets and all of that. And we were able to do it, but certainly would have been great to know that. That's just one thing that always sticks with me because when we found that out, we were scrambling.
Yeah.
And I mean, we literally found it out months into the disaster. After we already had all the debris cleaned up. Also, just again, back to relationships, you know, knowing the leaders of like Missouri Baptist, you know, Galen Moss is now serving on the COAD and I got to meet him just a little bit during the disaster. But, you know, they've got an amazing team that is based here, but they serve all over the state. The chainsaw crews, knowing all of the people to call for this and for that, there's such a comfort in that. And it's also such, it just creates efficiencies that are going to save time and effort. And, you know, the difference between a disaster survivor having to wait days for assistance versus hours for assistance.
Right.
Again, I had the perspective of knowing from my father-in-law, his house had to be taken down because it was structurally unsound, but we have lots of family in the community. So he didn't need the assistance of the Long-Term Recovery Committee, but if he would have, you know, I just have such a keen perspective of that now after seeing it from both perspectives of there's a lot of people that maybe they don't have family, they don't have people. And so that's what I say, United Way and the Long-Term Recovery Committee, we were their people, you know, we were there for those people who didn't have anybody else to lean on.
Sure. So with COAD, so if someone's wanting to help, how can they join in that effort? Maybe they have some special skills or some special perspectives.
Yes, we would love for anyone and everyone, whether they represent an organization or just as an individual, to reach out. You can reach out to me at I still have my United Way email, ann.bax@unitedwaycemo.org. Or you can call the United Way and they can get your information, anyone who's interested, information to me. We have our next meeting meeting is August the 1st at 8:30 in the morning at the Soybean Association on South Country Club Drive. We need anyone and everyone to step forward, because when you think about an emergency in the community, sometimes you don't think about all the different entities that are touched and are needed. For example, we were talking last week, we don't have any grocery stores around the table yet. We need to get grocery stores around the table. We went to the grocery stores after the tornado to use their grocery carts. We went to them certainly for water, and lots of water, and then of course food and cleaning supplies. But so that's just one of the most recent examples we were talking about. That's a gap in our membership. So we're going to be more heavily making direct asks to recruit, but certainly would love people, if they hear hearing this and have an interest, give us a shout. We would love to talk to you.
So Anne, as you look back 5 years, what is there to celebrate about? What is there to remember?
I think celebrating, again, is back to the fact that we are stronger and we have a better understanding of the strengths of each of the organizations and what's appropriate for each of us to focus on to best serve the community. To remember, never take for granted, number one, that an emergency can happen, a disaster can happen, because, you know, they always said it would never happen here.
Right.
And so we know that's not true, but also just the great community that we have. And despite, you know, we lost a lot of beautiful buildings, a lot of historic buildings on this street. People lost things that you can never replace, but I think it's just such a blessing that we didn't have anyone that died. Had a tornado hit during the day, things could have looked a lot different.
Yeah.
And we could have lost lives. As horrible as it was, we can celebrate the fact that we're resilient, we persevered, and here we are, bigger and better 5 years later.
Well, Anne, thank you for your part in helping us rebuild, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I am just blessed to have been a part of it. And again, got to work with just amazing people who care so much about this community. So it was certainly difficult, because it was hard to see all the people that needed help, and we couldn't get it done fast enough, but we got it done, and we're blessed for this community, and loved my time with United Way, and loved that United Way could play a role in helping to serve and rebuild.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.